Live from New York City, it's The Gary Noel Show. And now, your host, Gary Noel.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Noel, broadcasting but not video streaming because I'm on location. We're here to empower people. Sometimes hearing how bad things are and how inept the people looking for solution are is empowering, because at least you know, wow, I wasn't aware that the so-called experts are really not experts. They're opportunists. So it's important to be able to see what can be done reasonably by others and what you need to do for yourself. We'll be discussing that on today's show. Today, the latest on health and healing, and always from the quality independent researchers around the world using the best information from the best studies, all peer-reviewed. Then we're going to go to our audio clips. I'm going to also take some time. Hopefully, I'll answer a couple questions from our talkback, where you have a chance to call in and ask your questions or make your statements. Our voicemail line, let me give it to you so you can write it down, is 862-800-6805, 862-800-6805. And I find that most people actually listen to the program not live, but downloaded. Just from Sunday alone, it was over 10,000. Just from one server, we have 19 of them. So it gives you an idea how many people are downloading for a single day. Now here's the number to go to our archives. 701-719-9976. 701-719-9976. We're going to hear more about 5G. When I was flying yesterday into a destination to do some filming, from the airport and at the airport, clear down the highway, within 5 miles, I counted five large 5G towers. When I was running in the park yesterday morning with our Natural Living Running and Walking Club members, nice group of people, and I said, look up at the buildings and clear down Harlem at 110th Street, and then down Central Park West, you could see all these towers. I'll bet anything the residents of those buildings are not aware of the dangers they're going to be permeating their building, their brain, their body, their heart, their muscles, 24/7. And this is just the beginning. So we're going to hear from Dr. and Professor Graham Downing. And also today, we're going to hear from a mother who wrote an interesting lyrics about what happened when her child was vaccinated. I think every parent, every woman, every man who has children or is intending to have children should pay attention to what she's saying. And yet these are the women that no one believe. And let's think about that for a moment. 7 million parents, 3.5 million of them women, at least, or more, because I'm not even talking about the single parents, have vaccine-damaged children. And none of them, not a single one, is given credibility by the media. They're mocked and ridiculed by the so-called experts. And so we're fighting back. We're the voice in a forum for those who've been injured. That's part of the Pacifica mission, is be a voice for the voiceless. Well, you'll hear what we're doing on this. That's today. And if we have any time left over, Dr. Susan Humphreys in a short thing on measles and the whole fraud of this current so-called epidemic. There's no epidemic. There's no major disaster. And thank goodness in Rockland County, a judge overruled that ban. So that's our show today. We began with Michigan State University, a study that was in the experimental biology meeting, and it talked about food additive can influence how well flu vaccines work. And I read this article, and it's about what is called TBHQ, and that's a chemical that's found in a lot of foods, cooking oils, frozen meats, especially fish, and processed foods like potato chips and crackers. And what it does, according to this, it then makes your body susceptible, because in your body will not recognize the viruses and therefore create an antibody reaction as it would otherwise. And so they thought that was important that they studied that way. Here's my suggestion to them. I think you're completely wrong in your approach. And just like everyone else in the war on cancer, in the war on heart disease, in the war on AIDS, you have the right intention, and I commend that, and you want to see people educated in the medical community make right choices, but you're consistently making the wrong choices. Example, your mathematical model is no better than alchemy out of the 17th century. Meaning, if 1 million people receive the flu vaccine and only 10 people get the flu, you will say that 100% of the credit goes to the flu vaccine. And that's completely scientifically invalidated and verifiable. You won't know, did someone not get the flu because they live in Florida and spend a lot of time in the sun, hence vitamin D. What about the people living in Southern California who do yoga and go for jogs? What about the people in Colorado at Mile High and who are out there biking and eating healthy and having their juices and de-stressing? All of that will impact your immune system, which then impacts the incidence and severity of flu. So, but you're not counting any of that, and that's how bad and how monotheistic the mindset in science is today, aside from it also being utterly corrupt in much of it. Proprietary science is fully corrupt, in my opinion. So saying that a single food additive is what impacts the cells, and these are in mice, well, since when did a mice have a choice of a lifestyle that could enhance their immune system? Now, I work with thousands and thousands of mice, and I can tell you, I did, which was a whole open 3,000 square foot area to roam, giving them soft, relaxing music and full spectrum lighting and a healthy vegan diet and juices every day. Never once was bitten. It would freak people out who would come up to the institute at night. And I finally had to put a wall in, and just so that they wouldn't keep coming over and trying to pet the mice and might get bit. But they never once in all those times. But my mice were living almost twice the normal length of time. And when I wrote a paper on it, the downstairs scientists, those doing chemotherapy work and all into orthodox drugs, they didn't believe it. I actually had to do the study again, because if you looked at them, they smoked, they drank, they were unhealthy. And so they assumed that if they couldn't do this as a human, how in the world could a mouse do it? Well, they were wrong, and we did it, and each time I did it, we do the same results. This study is not giving any credit. They're sterilizing the entire environment for mice and then saying, this one thing makes a difference, and therefore if we implement this in our next round of flu vaccines or sometime in the future, we'll have a better... That is so foolish, so wrong-headed by people who should know better. But then again, many people in the scientific community are very limited thinkers. We like to think because you have a advanced education and you're successful in a given career that somehow you've got a deep understanding of life. Not the case. Next up, from Marshall University. The more spicy food you have, especially the chili pepper family, it can slow lung cancer progression. Now, this according to Marshall University, that the compound responsible for chili pepper, pepper's heat could slow the spread of lung cancer. And by the way, that's the leading cause of cancer death for both men and women. And most cancer-related deaths occur when cancer spreads to distant sites, what we call metastasis. So this study showed that to help that not happen, you use the capsicum, the cap, C-A-P, say, S-A-I, sin, C-I-N, capsicum, is what prevents that from happening. And this was presented at the American Society for Investigative Pathology and the experimental biology meeting. So that's good. Spicy foods. Now, if it can help prevent the spread of lung cancer, then by extension of simple intellectual reasoning, if they only studied, and this is again, I want to share this with you because those of you in this audience who have just nothing but good common sense will understand what I'm saying. Here's how science works. You do maybe a 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 year study, and you're able to show that vitamin C will help slow down and even stop, let's say, a cancer, colorectal cancer. And you make your presentation. So someone else comes up and says, well, if it's able to stop or stop the spread and growth of colorectal cancer, a very serious cancer, wouldn't it also do the same for other cancers? And the immediate answer is no, there's no study. So if you wanted to see whether vitamin C would help with brain cancer and lung cancer and leukemias, you'd have to do 50 different studies for 50 different types of cancer, because not once will any oncologist say, maybe I ought to use reason and common sense. You have no idea how absolutely ramrod, orthodox, rigid the scientific community is. It is so frustrating, I simply stopped looking at many of their reports out of orthodoxy, because it was all the same. There was none of what I call intellectual coupling. You take a point A, you learn from it, and then you expand that to all other points. Otherwise, it works this way, what I call the dead horse syndrome. You have a group of people walking to work each day, and they're all walking by a dead horse. So one day, after a year, you go out on the street and you say, you're all walking by a dead horse. What? We are? Where? Right there. Wow, there's a dead horse there. I never saw it. You saw it every time you walked by. You chose not to make it important. You chose not to bring it into any spectrum of your existence, which would then cause you to have to do something. Be responsible. Okay, you win. I'll be responsible. So a group of people remove the dead horse. And then they smile. They congratulate themselves. See, we did something. You only did what you were forced to do by embarrassment. But now, a week later, but there was a dead cow beside the dead horse. Oh, you didn't tell us to clean up the dead cow. Oh, you only told us to... And then you start to think, how's it possible that they could learn one lesson but not couple it with anything else? That's the society we're living in today. Mind-numbingly limited by intent. So that's something to think about. So in my world, and by the way, it's just not theoretical, and it's not just laboratory findings, but it's also thousands of clinical people using my protocols with a medical staff. We actually were able to reverse every cancer there is. Leukemias, astrocytomas, glioblastomas, from end stage to nothing. Now, why wasn't that ever published in any peer-reviewed journal? Because that will never get through the peer review system if it challenges the status quo. And that's the reality. From China Medical University in Taiwan, acupuncture reduces the risk of coronary heart disease in people with rheumatoid arthritis. And you frequently see concomitant or concurrent disease manifestation, meaning you have one disease, and you think, oh, thank God, I only have, diabetes. No, you have multiple diseases. They're just not manifesting, so you can identify them, and by the time you do manifest, you might be congestive heart failure, it might be a tumor. So just assume that if you're sick with one thing, that's what the system can no longer protect you from, but think of all the things you're still processing. So in this study, looking really at chronic autoimmune disease, and that causes inflammation and swelling and pain in the joints, it also causes inflammation to the heart and to the brain. There's no signaling system in the body that says, ah, okay, cytokines, you all go to the joints, but nowhere else, you can't stray. Ah, and you can't go anyplace else except for the brain, because we want to get you ready for your Alzheimer's and dementia. Who are you? What's your name? I'm your father. I'm your son. I'm your daughter. I'm your mother. You are? Yeah. Why don't I know that? Because your brain is inflamed and it's laid down amyloid plaque. Why did my doctor tell me? Because your doctor was probably going to have the same thing happen to them, because you're all believing the same wrong protocol. So the idea is, we found inflammation in the brain. Okay, let's stop a moment, go back to one of those common sense insights. Your blood circulates about every 6.5 minutes through your body, hitting anywhere from 50 to 100 trillion cells, depending upon body size. So the blood that's carrying these inflammatory agents to your joints, arthritis, to your muscles, fibromyalgia, to your colon, polyps and colorectal cancer, to your lungs, COPD, emphysema, asthma, to your eyes, macular degeneration, is also carrying it to your brain. Nothing's left out. And you'd ask any scientist or physician, and they'll absolutely disagree with that. And they're absolutely right. They're 100% right. When you say the inflammation in the brain is just to the brain, they're right. But when I tell you it goes to every cell in the body, I'm right. There's always going to be two rights to every issue. Just ask yourself, what to you is the most reasonable, and what does the actual science show? And then you start to realize, wow, after tens of trillions of dollars spent, we have so little to show for it, except building monuments to greed and narcissism and ego. So here's a little acupuncture, denigrated by the quacks and busters and Wikipedia and the so-called expert skeptics. Here's another peer-reviewed journal. Here's another report. And this was published in the British Medical Journal of Complementary and Alternative Medicine. Acupuncture works. And they looked at 29,741 patients, and they discovered that there's this connection. And sure, there's a connection. Just like your mouth, the bacteria and viruses in your mouth can directly migrate to your heart and cause heart disease. And hence, any inflammatory process anywhere in the body can migrate to the heart. And hence, coronary heart disease. So if you think you're healthy because they got it early, no, they got it 30 years late. So we should be living preventatively. Just an idea. Also from Chongqing Medical University in China, published in Clinical Research in Hepatology and Gastroenterology, comes a study that says, when you're really deficient in vitamin D, which a lot of people are, it can predict death if you have cirrhosis of the liver. Now, we have a lot of people in our society who drink and as a result have cirrhosis of the liver. And liver cirrhosis in both men and women were looked at in a meta study, meaning they looked at many different studies. And they find that the vitamin D, 25-hydroxyvitamin D levels, could directly relate to mortality from all causes, meaning anything. And so while vitamin D levels have to be up, they were down. And when they're down, you're more likely to die. All right? It's just that simple. If you got cirrhosis of the liver, you've got a real chance of dying if you don't get vitamin D into your body. From Moral Health Foundation, which is the United Kingdom, eating a handful of dark-colored berries can help prevent tooth decay. Why? Well, according to this study published in the European Journal of Oral Sciences, berries are well known, I've talked about them many times, as cancer-fighting foods, as brain foods. They're great for the brain, for energy, cranberries, blueberries, goji berries. They're all good. And so for the study, the researchers used high-quality extracts of cranberries, blueberries, and strawberries, and they put them together in a combination. And they found that these extracts were able within 24 hours to treat Streptococcus mutans biofilm. That's a really serious condition. And they found that the berries had a big deal effect. So in your mouth, they can kill bacteria. Who knew? Now you know. So having berries every day is good for your the biofilm, the good bacteria, and remember, the good bacteria in your gut also communicates instantly every millisecond with the good bacteria throughout the rest of the body, and you have 10 times more bacteria in the body than you have cells. That gives you an idea of how many you have. So the extract of cranberries and blueberries and strawberries was effective in inhibiting S. mutans, virulence properties without substantially affecting bacterial viability. So just one more reason why we should be having the rich fruit and berries, the polyphenols, because these are all natural functional foods against dental cavities. And finally, from Washington State University comes a good study on exercise when you're pregnant protects your offspring from obesity. That's correct. What they're saying is that the new study found that offspring born in this laboratory study were far less likely to have fat accumulated later in life if the female had exercised during her gestation. So that's important, and that was presented at the American Physiological Society's annual meeting on experimental biologicals. Oh, by the way, one last thing, and this really should be debunked once and for all. This is from University of Colorado. A new university study assessing genetic and survey data from 620,000 individuals found that those who are told that depression is genetic, it's not. It's not. All right? Like a lot of things we were told are genetic, they're not. Everyone in life experiences unhappiness as a result of a change or a loss, end of a relationship, end of a job, knowing that someone that you love and value is passing. So in some form, emotionally, all of us are impacted by loss. And what did Freud call it? Everyday misery? The painful feelings that accompany these events are usually appropriate and necessary, but they're transitory. We need to grieve. We need to reflect on what we can't control in life. And depression affects over 300 million people worldwide, making it the largest contributor to global disability. And over the past quarter century, researchers have published hundreds of studies suggesting a small set of particular genes or gene variants play a substantial role in boosting susceptibility to depression. But it wasn't true. It wasn't true. So even with the best of intent, they were wrong. And this was published in the American Journal of Psychiatry. That's the Bible for psychiatrists. So get away from that gene called SLC6A4. It's not the danger we've been led to believe. Oh, and by the way, from the France's National Institute of Health, if you follow an organic, rich diet, you lower your cancer risk by 25%. That's a big deal. And that was published in the Journal of the American Medical Association's Internal Medicine. So we like to give you the latest from quality research around the world. And that's it. Back in a moment with, oh, and by the way, if we have any diabetics in the audience who are suffering from cardiomyopathy, good research on resveratrol treating it. This is from Sanjiang People's Hospital in China. So if you have diabetic cardiomyopathy, resveratrol is something that you should be having in your system. I'll be back in a moment with your calls.
Hi, Gary. This is Karen from New York. Thank you for everything you do. Really appreciate it. I have a question regarding diatomaceous earth. I'm wondering if you yourself take it, if you recommend it. Do you think it helps clean out the intestines and the colon? Thank you very much for your answer. Bye.
No, I don't take it, and I don't recommend anyone else take it, though there was a movement in the natural hygiene area where people were advocating it. You first have to understand what diatomaceous earth is. It's frequently used in swimming pools in the filtration system, but it's really fossilized prehistoric material, and it's very sharp. But it's a powder. But don't be confused by that, because they're little shards, almost like shards of glass. They're not glass. They're fossilized material. And when you spread it out on a lawn, any insect, a tick, a spider, a scorpion, anything crawling across it is going to have little lacerations in their body from this. And then they dehydrate. Now, I have never had a tick bite, nor have I ever had anyone on my property of ranches and farms. I've lived on a ranch or farm as an organic farmer and naturalist and a conservationist and an environmentalist my entire adult life. Many of you have been to the Fertiller Farm upstate. That was the first organic teaching farm in New York State. In fact, it was the first food co-op in all of New York State. In fact, in the East Coast. One person claimed that there was a place in L.A. that had a food co-op sooner, but when we actually did the homework, we were 3 months ahead of them. But be that as it may, I'm glad that, you know, the movement started. But we started up there. And people were wondering, and in fact, I remember once we were all in a circle, and it was at sunrise. We were doing meditation, and someone was leading us in a meditation. And one of the guests said, I'm not sure I want to sit in the grass. I'm afraid of ticks. And I said, well, we have completely covered this every week for the last month with diatomaceous earth. No one ever got ticks. Down in Texas, the Healing Springs Ranch, same thing. 200 acres we spread with diatomaceous earth. Now, there's two things that will help you prevent ticks and spiders and other things. One, diatomaceous earth. You can't put it down in rainy season because it'll go right into the soil. You have to have a dry day. So you put it in the fall and the winter and the spring before the rains. But it lasts, and it depends upon how large an area you use it on as to how much you can protect what you have. And secondly, guinea hens. Guinea hens are these wonderful social creatures, and they run in packs, and for no reason all suddenly they just scurry. But they are voracious eaters, and they eat a tremendous amount of insects. So you just let them out every morning, and they just run around and eat all day, and then in the evening they go back in. You know, lock them in to protect them from predators. Chickens can do the same thing. The difference is chickens can be susceptible to airborne attacks by hawks and eagles and birds of prey. Guinea hens run as a pack, so they almost never get killed. Chickens are all over the place. But chickens can do the same thing, especially if you're not known to have hawks or eagles in your area. They eat a lot. I remember once down in Texas at the Healing Springs Ranch, there was a commotion over in one of the barns. We had 9 big barns, and because we had a lot of large animals that would be rescued, an animal, and this was always good news, when I heard that an animal hunting farm went bankrupt. These were where you have these jerks who pay a lot of money to go in and dress up in camouflage outfits and get in a truck, and they take you out to some peaceful grazing animals and they shoot them and then cut off their head and have a taxidermist. What, you know, it's just, it is so inhumane. You got to wonder, and Trump's two sons are into this in a big way. That shouldn't surprise anyone. In any case, when they went broke, I would always get the call. And so we'd take the animal trucks down, we'd bring them back. One time it was 56 buffalo, and they were emaciated and had mange. And within 2 years, they were healthy and friendly. And I was of the good fortune, my brother was an animal whisperer. I mean, an authentic animal whisperer. I saw him do stuff with animals that no one has ever done. In fact, I just posted on Saturday, you got to go up there and see this on my personal Facebook page. It's a short little clip of a young French girl. I'm guessing she's about 6 or 7. I don't think she's older than that. Maybe even 5. And there she is in her little sneakers and shorts, and she's running through the bush in Africa, in the plains. Now, mind you, and here's what you got to understand, these are not tame animals. These are all wild animals in their natural habitat. And she runs over to a leopard, a full-grown leopard. And she starts to pet the leopard and hug the leopard, and then she lays down beside the leopard. And the leopard goes to grab her by the head and, you know, just plays with her. And then after she gets up, the leopard walks beside her. And then she comes up to a rogue elephant, I mean a huge rogue elephant. And she goes over and starts hugging its leg, and the elephant's looking down at her. And then the elephant puts its trunk, end of his trunk right in her face and covers her whole face. And then she climbs up the elephant's trunk and gets on its head, and he walks around with her. And he walks over to an elephant watering hole. Now, mind you, you don't ever want to go near a rogue, a bull elephant. But there's one on either side of her. So what does she get to do? She gets down off the trunk, and she starts playing in the water with him and splashing all the elephants, including all these. Now, the whole water hole was filled with these And she does this. Now, there's a longer version of this where she also goes over to hyena and wild dogs in Africa, one of the most successful predatory creatures in Africa, and lions. And when I saw her go over and start hugging a wild lion, so no matter what animal she went to, she was a whisperer, meaning the animal at the spiritual level invited her in and treated her as if it was one of her, their own cubs and babies. You got to see this to believe it, but it was true. And then I saw another one when she was about 13. She went back and she did the same thing. I mean, she, no matter what animal, black mamba she was playing with, didn't bite her. A cobra didn't bite her. An alligator, crocodile, did not chew her to pieces. A wild buffalo. So anyhow, I would sometimes have those. And we had all these barns. And there was a whole commotion in one of the barns. And I went over to look. And here it was all the chickens. And they had a copperhead, a big copperhead. And they were just, they killed it and ate it. And so you appreciate that someone could have been bitten by that copperhead. Because remember, you're out in the woods. You're in their territory. And that's why having chickens and guinea hens, diatomaceous earth, helps protect your environment. It is not good for the system. Do not take it in. If you want to use some green clay diluted under supervision, that is a very therapeutic benefit, but you got to know what you're doing. Otherwise, you can get constipated from it. Okay, we'll take one more call.
This is Bob. Is it possible to eat too much fiber, both soluble and insoluble, whereby the food passes through the system too quickly, and then food is undigested, and a person loses weight, too much weight? So is it possible to have too much fiber, both soluble and insoluble?
It's not quite that simple. First, there are many mitigating circumstances you have to consider. For example, is the diet principally high fiber, but also how much fat? Is it animal fat or vegetable fat? How much protein is it? Are you combining fats with proteins? Do you have simple sugars in the diet? All these have to be understood to see whether or not you're doing something and what benefits the body's digestion. Are you secreting enough bile or too little? Do you have proper hydrochloric acid? Most people at the age of 40 do not. And once you know that, then have to ask yourself, by the time you properly chew your food, and there are two little holes under the tongue, and it secretes two enzymes, ptyalin and amylase. That helps to chemically break down the chewing of the food into what is called bolus. Then that goes into the stomach, in which it becomes chyme, almost like a soup. So by the time the food exits the stomach with the pyloric sphincter muscle that opens, it's a flap, you have your cardiac sphincter and your pyloric sphincter, it then pours into the intestine where the first 12 inches, more or less, it deacidifies it, then enzymes are acted upon again, and then it makes its way through the jejunum and other parts where the nutrients are actually absorbed. So up to that point, it's not about fiber. It's about the full spectrum of the nutrition that preceded it. Now, once at that point, if you have a lot of fiber, it depends upon what kind of fibers you have. Now, that can speed up the intestine or it can slow it down. If you have a lot of fat, it slows down. Eating fat in a meal is like driving on a highway and suddenly there's a car wreck and you all go 2 miles an hour. That's what it is until that digestion is past that point. Now, you could take too much fiber, but if you did, you're going to end up with diarrhea. You're going to become weak. You're going to frequently be dehydrated. So you have to look at how you feel. You would not have proper stool formation. So if you are eating properly with, let's say, somewhere between 30 and 50 grams of fiber a day, and that's over a whole day, then there's always fiber at some point in your digestive tract. And then that's the healthy way to do it. But if you got on some high fiber diet, especially liquid diet, you could end up having too much fiber, in which case you could have some electrolyte insufficiencies and nutrient deficiencies, and you would feel it, and therefore you should stop that kind of diet. That's an unhealthy diet. All right. That's it on that. Now, we're going to go to some of our audio clips that I want you to hear. I'm going to continue now with 5G, and this is a Dr. Graham Downing, and we're going to play a little bit each day. Today we're playing 10 minutes of him talking about the dangers of 5G, because every moment on television we're seeing some kind of ad, and you've seen it, how you see these lights streaking through a city and across the country and all these buildings. We're connecting you. We're making everything faster and easier. And you have some young millennial going, yeah. Make it easier. Make it faster. I don't want to think about anything. I just want what I want. I want it now. And if I don't get it, I'm going to call mom and dad, and they're going to get a helicopter parent. And then we're going to have a bulldozing parent. We're all going to come and we're going to raise hell. Get it now. Okay. You're getting it now. You're just not going to like what you get. So I want all of you to think well that this is an extremely dangerous technology. I'm writing a major article on it. It'll be done by the end of the week, and I'll post it. But in the interim, every single day I'm playing something on 5G.
I'm not going to be disrespectful to that lady, but Jesus, you know. This is an app called The Architecture of Radio. Anyone heard about this app? You can go and download it using this horrible technology. But this is a little, all right, it's graphical kind of representation. This is a bit more real. You put it on your computer or on your iPad, and you can look around. It gives you a representation of what's going on around you. Once again, it's graphical, but who wants to live amongst this? And this is now. We haven't even got into the 5G. You want to bring your kids up in this stuff? Bearing in mind, I've only just started this talk, and bearing in mind the amount of damage I just told you it does to you. You hear the kids in the background? Okay, download that and have a look and amaze yourself what's around you, maybe even in this room. Einstein, who was a clever chap, says that you can't demodulate these waves, means they just last forever. Some of them get trapped in our atmosphere, and we just keep filling up our atmosphere with this stuff. There's things called biological entities. Okay, and if to cut a long story short, they're going too far. They come from outer space, and they found a whole bunch of these on one of the space stations while they were cleaning the windows. And they turn around and say, well, this is a bit interesting. How did they get up here? They must be very tough. That's not a space bacterial entity. That's called a tardigrade, just to show you that there are these things that can survive. This thing can survive unbelievable heat and pressure. So these bacteria and things like that are tough. Anyway, long story short, British scientists looked into it and said, they're not coming from Earth, they're coming from space. And there's three of them there. And there's about 0.1 tons of this stuff falling every day. Did you know that? These kind of space bugs coming down. NASA did research on this, and basically in space they become very tough. And in a sense they're resistant to treatment. So they did studies, and they think there's a problem with that. What they found is that this millimeter wave, microwave, it can cause antibiotic resistance. There's arguments either side. But we are hanging on by our fingernails at the moment with antibiotic treatment of disease. Okay? There's about 50,000 people a year in the States, I think, an equivalent over here, that are dying every year because we haven't got antibiotics for them. So is it a good idea to bombard the whole of this planet with this stuff if it has that effect on bacteria and space bacteria that's coming in? You all know this stuff. They've done studies with wheat shoots that causes damage to the wheat shoot, how it grows. They've shown that it causes necrosis in leaves, and there's also damage with birds and with bees, and also even the human sweat ducts are going to be affected by this technology. They hypothesize it's going to cause pain. And in fact, some of these devices are actually used to do that, if you've ever seen them. This was released by Muckrock, which is a kind of online magazine, and they gave a freedom of information request to one of the American Fusion Centers, which is a government center to do with security and terrorism. They put in a basic freedom request about something, you know, reasonably innocuous, and they were sent, by mistake, documentation, and the documentation showed how towers and this technology was going to be used to control the population. Now, I very rarely will put stuff up like this unless I've got an official source, and this was official. It went all through the details of how you affect the human body, even to the point of putting voices in the head. Okay, now I've seen a demonstration of that done with music, which it can do. Now, this is just, I'm not going to go off on a tangent about it. They knew about that since in 1974, for crying out loud. So do you really want this stuff bombarding you? I don't think so. They're also talking about using this kinds of technology to monitor for disease with permanent crowd monitoring. They're also talking about the Gavi organization, which is Mr. Gates. Anyone know about Bill Gates? Talking about how they use the, they want these technologies so they can monitor kids in Africa to make sure that they've been vaccinated. You may believe in vaccination, I don't know, but I don't think you should be monitoring people with this technology. Also, ID 2020 is coming in, sponsored by the usual culprits, and effectively they're using this to give everybody an ID. That's what they want to do globally by 2020. I think they're a little bit behind. And they want to be able to monitor you from the cradle to the grave. And they want to make sure that you're doing everything they want you to do. So if they want you to take a drug, you will be monitored for it and measured. This is what this technology is being is really being ramped up for. This is the video. Maybe I won't play this.
It lights up really nice.
Maybe I'll play you this one. Okay.
This is one woman's experience of living on the top floor under cell antennas for 2 months.
It started with my daughter. She initially got a rash on her leg that was sort of unexplainable. And when she was trying to explain to me what it felt like, she kept saying it was kind of funny because it wasn't hurting inside or on the skin. She said it was hurting in the skin. And then a few days later, she got another rash on her arm and then another small kind of stranger rash, and it was the same thing. And then one day in the kitchen, she was holding something and she dropped it because she said it felt like the blood in her hand went cold and in a wave along her hand to her fingertips, and then her hand stayed numb for about 15 minutes. Some more of the symptoms include a sort of hissing in my ear, in particular when I'm in my apartment, but for about 3 days, anywhere I went, it would just sort of come in. I kind of felt like an antenna, and I'd sort of kind of go like trying to find the place where the hissing or the buzzing stopped. I've not slept in my apartment since last Saturday, so a week ago now, and the buzzing went away after about 3 days. And also the feeling of tingling all over my body slowly started to go away, but I have noticed that whenever I'm in other buildings now or anywhere close to, I don't even know what, because I was never sensitive before. I'm no Luddite. I have, you know, I have computers, I have all the stuff that you know most of us have, and I've never been sensitive at all. But now, wherever I go, I'm feeling the same as I felt in my apartment, feeling dizzy and nauseous and a sort of a metallic taste in my mouth, headache and pressure on my head, and just feeling like I want to sort of faint or throw up. And that's wherever I go now. So I found myself becoming increasingly sensitive to my own, you know, my own computer and my own cell phone in ways that I never was before.
Anybody getting those symptoms? There's various papers out that talk about this may be one of the reasons is to do with how, and this is actually saying it's nothing to do with heat, it's how to do with the water is bound on cells that may be affected by this technology. Loads of reviews. A normal brain MRI will not show someone who's sensitive to this. But they've actually published a study and they found an abnormality described as a hyperconnectivity of different parts of the brain with people that are sensitive to Wi-Fi. And interestingly, it's also the differential diagnosis, which you could also say might be linked, is someone who may have had a head trauma or who is susceptible to yeast or yeast infection. Those people seem to, in this study, have to been, there seems to be a link between those and people who are sensitive to Wi-Fi. And yeast infections are massively prevalent. Does anyone use Facebook? Anyone use social media? Those bloody things that go off, bing, bong, bang, every 5 minutes, where it drives you absolutely nuts when a text comes in and all the rest of it. They found that checking your Facebook or your Instagram when something goes off is linked to part of your brain shrinking. Did you know that? It's called the nucleus accumbens, shrinking. Now, I said this before, they don't know if it's the fact that it causes it to shrink, or people with that small part of the brain are the people that like using the Facebook, we don't know, but I suspect it's the former. It's regarded the reward center. This thing is linked in with things, also Instagram, it's linked in with things like addiction and other things as well. Now, isn't it interesting that when you undergo a traumatic brain injury, that same part of the brain shrinks? And as I've said countless times, you've ever heard me speak before, if you've got children, for crying out loud, do not let them go on this stuff. And if you're going to use it, be absolutely judicious. You've got to be very discreet in how you use this stuff. Do not buy it on all day. That's my advice to you. Also, what this does is it creates apathy. Okay? And I could talk all day long on the implications of that. And the studies are there. So if you're on this, if you're constantly looking at your bloody phone and this thing's going off all day and you're bing and bang a text, then you need to understand that there's going to be a reckoning to that. About 2 billion years ago, the forerunner of your cells were born. Each one of your cells was born by two bacteria. They kind of got together and had a little marriage. One of the bacteria could survive in very low oxygen, the other in very high oxygen. And this becomes important when we talk about 5G. And they've worked this out because they looked at the DNA. These things here, they're mitochondria. That's the descendant of one bacteria. And the rest of the cell is the descendant of the other bacteria. They kind of formed a nice marriage and it survived over the millions of years of our evolution. We used to think that the DNA ran the cell. Now we think that this little bugger here has actually got a lot more to do with it. And it uses reactive oxygen intermediaries, and it also uses probably low electromagnetic fields itself to communicate and help run this cell. Well, there's a problem there, because these little things produce energy, okay? And they produce most of the energy in your body. In actual fact, they produce over 90% of the energy. And at any one point in time, you have to produce every day your own body weight of molecules of energy that are made in these little factories. You've probably only got about 5 seconds storage at any one point in time. Now, if you don't get that energy, you're obviously very seriously unwell and probably will die. And things like cancer and chronic fatigue are linked to that. These are enzymes in these little factories that make this energy. Now, there's various debates. I'm just going to go quickly through this about how it's done. But the point is this. What you don't want to do is you don't want to damage them. Because if you damage them, you're going to get things like cancer. Or you're going to die, okay? Because suddenly, your ability to make loads of energy stops. And you start making very low amounts of energy. So microwave, millimeter wave technology, damages the mitochondria in a time response, dose response way. That's a classic way of proving that something causes harm. Okay, so already we have evidence that it does that. And it damages two particular key enzymes. One's called succinate dehydrogenase, and the other's called cytochrome C oxidase. Now, this is science. This is not someone with a tinfoil hat talking crap. Excuse my French. This is absolutely science, okay? Now, there's a human resonance again, and we talked about that. Now, does anyone meditate here? Well, the frequencies of the human resonance are often quoted very, very similar to the same frequencies in the brain when you meditate, and there's actually studies on it, and I've pulled one up there. And therefore, do you really want to be mucking around with these frequencies? And also, we found out, because you've got different frequencies in your brain, that you need to be healthy and to be alive. And we absolutely know that these mitochondria are also involved in doing that as well. See this thing here? This is kind of a diagram of a cell, if you like. You kind of got the center part of the DNA. You've got these little mitochondria floating around in a kind of cytoplasm, if you like. There are 1,000 of them in each cell, and they're communicating, they're helping to run the cell, keep you alive. If you're going to bombard that with millimeter wave technology, you're absolutely going to disrupt that. So this is the reason why we're very, 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 very worried about this, because the key thing in your cell that keeps you alive is going to be affected by this technology. Is 5G about to destroy 2 billion years of evolution? And that's the question that I'm asking, and I'd like an answer. I think it's a very reasonable request. Can we have an answer on this, please? Because without this stuff working, we're dead. Why are they doing this? Why are they bringing whoever they are? Why are they bringing 5G in? Okay, did you hear him? The head guy said, oh, the Internet of Things. The Internet of Things, where everything's going to be labeled. We're all going to be, I don't want to be labeled. I don't want to be wear stuff that's got chips all over the place. Thank you very much. Has anybody heard of the Sentient World Simulation? Published about 2000.
All right, that is Dr. Graham Downing, and we have three more segments coming. Now I want to go to, for all of the mothers and fathers in this audience who have suffered not just the adverse reactions to vaccines by your child, but then being demeaned and denied any form to help correct this. This is one woman and her statement. I think you'll find of an interest.
As a mother of a vaccine-injured child, the hardest comment to hear from people is when they say over and over again, don't listen to them. They're just a bunch of crazy mothers. I am a mother. I am the one who knows the rhythm of my child's heartbeat. I am the one who gave life to this baby, no easy feat. I am that baby's first food, first sustenance in every sense of the word, emotionally, physically, spiritually, whether the first or the third. I have what it needs to survive and thrive. And now that they've grown a little, as a mother, I know when they need to eat or poop or get a big hug. I know when they are hiding. I know if they are lying. I know who hit who first without even trying. I know how they like to sleep, one bundled up, one without covers, and one somewhere in between. I know all of their dreams. I know their fears, their hopes. I know their wins and their losses. I know which one loves to brush her teeth and flosses every day so she won't get a cavity. I know how he won't eat it unless it's exactly right, so I'll make 3 meals just to avoid a fight. I know how to keep them safe, how to read the emotion on their little face, how one needs a nap while the other needs some space. I know how to juggle their feelings and toys and somehow keep it together with all that noise. And most importantly, I know what happened to my little boy. I know he had his shots one day at 6 months, the DTaP rotavirus Hib, and then fell into a deep sleep as I lay him in his crib, a sleep that instantly made me uneasy. When he awoke, he just screamed. He screamed for weeks and arched his back, but the nurses said it wasn't because of the DTaP. They said he just needed to poop because he hadn't in a couple of days. And so I prayed. And when he did finally go, it was green and slimy, so acidic it burned, and my mind was turning. I thought the Rotavax was supposed to prevent just that, diarrhea. For months it stayed that way. It seemed like his tummy got worse with each passing day. Every time I held him, I could feel the volcano that had replaced his stomach. But the doctor just said it was because he liked hummus and veggies. And then the ear infections began over and over, singles and doubles. But he'd received the Hib, which was supposed to prevent this. Still, the infections continued until I relented and he was put under to have tubes put in his tiny ears. My happy boy was no more. He was fussy and hurting, always in tears. I had no place to turn. I trudged on and realized I had so much to learn. He developed food allergies, another vaccine side effect. To gluten and dairy, to soy and to citrus, to everything, it seemed, except for my kisses, which I smothered him in to try and help him feel better. And then around 12 months, my nightmares came true as I watched the fog roll in. It tried to take my boy, too. I could see it in his face. He stopped smiling. He stopped waving. He stopped taking up space. He would stand by the window and not respond to his name. I knew then and there what was happening and began my crusade to bring my boy back, to fix my mistake. So imagine what happens when a mother realizes her child's injury is because of her. And a decision she made without researching to see if it was really as safe as they say, it drives you to the brink. And then you come back. And you think, what can I do? How can I fix this? I buried my pain. It wasn't important. Our lives have been changed. It's time to move forward. Then the research began. Studies published, books read. I reached out to doctors who scoffed and shook heads. But the new doctors and parents who embraced us with degrees, knowledge, and motives we can trust, who knew what we'd been dealing with, what was our truth. We weren't making this up. And there are things you can do to help your child recover from you. So we focused on that, what we knew. The biggest thing was, as always, the food. We changed our whole diet and lifestyle too. I wanted to heal him, not just get him through. So more research, more books, supplements, 2 probiotics and enzymes as he turned 2. He was getting better, but still verbally delayed. And I will never forget that beautiful day when I knew this regimen was working because he looked at me and sang his ABCs out of the blue. He had never uttered a part of that song before. My heart skipped a beat as my jaw hit the floor. I felt hope that day and gratitude in so many ways for the amazing doctors and authors and friends who'd kept us sane. The chiropractor, the diet, boosting his immune system, eliminating the toxins that can constantly surround him. It was all helping. Pieces of the puzzle were coming together. The fog that rolled in lifted and we saw better weather. Turns out there's a gene, a genetic mutation, that actually impairs your body's methylation. So kids who have this MTHFR or another variant, there's at least 50 so far, have a hard time removing the toxins within the vaccines. And there are plenty. We can go down the list, but there's almost too many. Fetal calf serum is a personal fave. Monkey kidney cells and aluminum phosphate. Now, aluminum is dangerous, or so says the FDA. No more than 25 micrograms a day. But in a shot, it's okay, which is good since a single vaccine can contain up to 800 micrograms. Insane. And what heavy metal have they started to say causes Alzheimer's? I'll give you a hint. It starts with an A. Then there's the formaldehyde, the egg protein, and of course aborted fetal cells. They do try to filter the dead baby stuff out, which is why it's listed as an excipient, no doubt. But the study that found injected DNA can still become biologically active and mutate? I won't get into that here, but let's just say we have no freaking clue if that's even remotely safe. There aren't enough studies, period. But why? I mean, we're talking about our children. You think they'd at least try to make sure that the adjuvants, excipients, preservatives, and of course the virus, dead or alive, will not harm as they stand there and inject it into his arm. Where's the 50-year longitudinal study of vax versus unvax? Why hasn't that happened? If the science is settled, then where is the data? Unavoidably unsafe. Or at least that's what our Supreme Court states, which makes sense when you look at the loads of vaccine injury cases and the amount of money that's been paid to keep families complacent. It's an astounding amount of money each year. A couple hundred million, just so we're clear, and that's just the families that made it to court. So many others don't know they can report it. Doctors say the reactions are normal. Chalk it up to coincidence and never record it. Parents get lost in the shuffle, don't know who to believe, and then begin the journey of trying to grieve for their kid who regressed. They start digging through the mess and trying to find a lawyer with time and energy spent whilst dealing with a sick kid or one that's now dead. That's why the CDC itself estimates only 1 to 10% of problems end up in their database. Go look up the numbers. The website's called VAERS. Do the math and then tell me reactions.
That's only half of what she had to say. Go to prn.fm, download the entire thing. And while you're there, we have four documentaries on vaccines for you to watch, as well as 52 articles to read so that you can share these with other people. May also be, unfortunately, unaware of these dangers. I'm Gary Knoll. Thank you all for listening, and have a nice day.
Lately, you've been